The following two episodes of Unsupervised Learning are intended to be watched on YouTube. So if you're already on YouTube, well done. If you're listening on Spotify, it might be a little bit of a bumpy ride. So all of the visual aids will be included in the show notes. It's a conversation with my guest co-host, Victor, a machine learning engineer at Google, where we go across a lot of the definitions that you may have heard in the AI world, but you don't know what they actually mean. And it's very non-linear and very interactive. So we hope you enjoy.
Are a bunch of books behind you.
I don't know if you're familiar with O'Reilly books, but they're ones with cute little they're ones with cute little animals.
So they are kind of categorized because that was my next question. Do you run a data camp, data camp, boot camp? You've run a data boot camp.
Yes, I was technically a lead instructor for Flatiron School boot camp for data science, like a few years ago now. I don't remember exactly the years anymore, but it feels like it's going by really quickly. It still exists. It used to be owned by WeWork, and then WeWork happened, and so it was sold off.
So you moved from data science to machine learning, did you?
Yeah, moved is less maybe a stronger word than it actually is. It was more like data science, because data science can cover so many different parts. So like if you ask someone, like I was on a team of data scientists. Like there was a team of, I think if I remember this right, five of us, and each of us were called data scientists, but each of us knew things. Like we're specialized in a way that the rest of us weren't. And so like data science can cover things like much more on the data analysis side, where you're kind of talking about, like looking at statistics. That's where a lot of people are writing SQL and stuff like that, basically looking at databases and stuff. And then onto the side, that's more on machine learning, where you're kind of like using some of that information on that data to basically do machine learning. And now like it's more mature now than it has been in the past, where now data science is kind of becoming more like data analytics focused. So when someone says data scientist, a lot of times they mean a data, like I think like data analysts on steroids. Like it's kind of like, oh, data analysts with like some programming stuff, but not always. And then you have a machine learning engineer that at some point some people still call themselves data scientists and are doing machine learning engineering. And it's just like, in short, data science is this huge umbrella that's super messy. That's like, but it's starting to mature now, and I think it's going to mature more and more, where it's going to be more defined. But in short, I basically was doing a lot of parts of data science, and I like doing that. Like I like getting the data analysis and stuff, but I've always been like big on the machine learning models. That's kind of like where my background ended up doing a lot. But over time, I kind of like have moved more and more towards just doing machine learning models. So now, I guess my former role is technically software engineer, but focus on like the machine learning side of stuff. So for me, I still tend to focus on natural language processing or NLP, which has turned a lot into like, transformers, large language models, LLMs kind of thing. But even before that, I was kind of focused on like the NLP side of stuff. But I would still touch models that were of different things. So you have in machine learning, you might have things like time series, again, like NLP focused models, computer vision. I touched a little bit of computer vision, but more for like my own stuff, never really professionally. Some people I
What did you
work
do
with,
with computer vision?
I more for fun, so one of the things I did was American Sign Language. Like that's something like, so I'll say, like, I want to say I'm fluent in sign language, but like American Sign Language specifically, ASL, but like kind of rusty since like high school. But I was basically taking what they call hand shapes, like the letters A, B, C, like with your hand, and using computer vision to detect what letter that is. And I was kind of playing around with like, could you move this into more general? With American Sign Language, you use hand shapes to not just spell out things, but also like convey like concepts and ideas. And so it's almost like the phonemes, if you're familiar with that for linguistics. It's kind of like the parts of speech when I say like, should, like should, right? That those parts, that's kind of not exactly, but it's kind of close to how hand shapes and ASL are, where they're kind of like the pieces of a whole bigger concept.
That's
So
really interesting. Was there something that made you do that? Like, why do you
yeah.
know American Sign Language?
Yeah. So the short of American Sign Language was because my hearing is not the best, and I was in high school and had to do a language, and I've used to stutter, and I was like, I don't want to do this with a new language now. And I was like, oh, there's American Sign Language where I don't have to speak. And I did that. I only had to do 2 years, but I ended up doing the 3 years that were offered at my high school. And that's what kind of exposed me. And I think it's a beautiful language. And it's just really interesting because it's just so like structurally different from other languages and stuff like this. And so that's kind of like why I like to continue on. And there's a lot of stuff, I think, like for accessibility, where that tends to be ignored. But like in America, we call like the deaf community, which is like a deaf with a capital D. So there's a lot of like identity, a lot of like, let's say like deaf culture. And so I just thought it would be really interesting to kind of pursue that, because it's just like, oh, like how difficult is this problem? Like short answer, which I kind of knew, was like, oh, it's difficult, but it's something that like, I think I see more and more actually in recent years, people doing it, which makes me excited. Mm-hmm. What is that supposed to look like? Another one that I had done for folks around NLP was kind of closer to like a question answering system, where someone can ask a question, and this is like it sounds very basic, it sounds like something you can do now, like, you know, like with like large language models, but this is like kind of like predates really a lot of like oh, you can just ask ChatGPT or, you know, GPT-4 API, where you would essentially ask a question and say, okay, like how do we grab from now the set of data, like text data, so like we call that like corpus, and pull relevant information and present that to the user, essentially. So it's kind of like search, but there was much more focus on how do we do this from, not trying to use like too big of words, but like an autoregressive model. So essentially kind of what the precursor of what like ChatGPT and other generated models like Gemini and such. And for NLP, that's usually like a word or something.
Okay.
Yeah, and I see your diagram now.
I'm trying to, for anyone who is listening on, you know, listening and doesn't have the actual screen, it'll be in show notes, but where am I going wrong here? Just models in general. So you have data in classification, okay, where it looks for similarities. And then that part is the regression. In regression is spotting relationship step, is how I've described it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Finding sequences. Mm-hmm. And then deep learning is making connections across the data. And then data out can be, you know, text, images, code. I'm sure there's something else, video.
Audio.
No.
Yeah.
Audio. Oh yeah, audio. I should have added that. And then that kind of feeds back into data in, or I can just go back out into product, whatever. But
yeah,
maybe this is good, place like, to start.
I probably wouldn't like draw those as arrows, just because it's not so much that like classification goes into like regression, into like finding sequence, like you say, recurrent neural networks, and then deep learning. It's much more like these are like, for example, classification and regression, in a lot of ways, they are very similar to each other. They're not quite the same, but they're much more of like what you can do with a supervised model. So when you do supervised learning, a lot of times you're going into classification or regression. And the way I like to summarize it is classification is saying, what group do you belong to? Versus regression is kind of like, what is the number that comes out of this? So the classic of this is if you have a model, and let's just assume like, oh, this model, like we'll say like an AI model, but you say machine learning model, and you take that thing and you have it like, you know, we call it trained, but basically it's like, oh, it knows something, it's learned something. You feed in data into this model, and the model can tell you like where that, from that data, can predict something like what group it's in. And say, for example, if you have a model that can detect whether it's a cat or dog, you can feed in like a picture of a cat or a dog, and you feed it in, say, here's a picture model, and the model looks at it and goes, okay, I think this is a dog, you know, and that would be a classification output. Another like kind of similar thing on that is like a regression model, where maybe you feed in a picture of a dog and it outputs the age or what the model thinks the age is. So it's like, oh, I think this dog is 24 months, or oh, I think this dog is, you know, 84 months or whatnot. And so that's kind of like the difference between classification and regression, but they're very related.
We're in like a little live collaboration. You said cats and dogs.
Yeah.
And ages. So how would ages come into it? Like, how would you have that? Is that just a different type of classification?
Yeah. So it's not quite the same. And like, this is where I'm hesitant to say like, it's literally the same thing, because depending on like what kind of machine learning model you have, like right now, when people talk about AI, they're usually talking about a very specific type of machine learning. Like we say like generative AI, like Gen AI, like they're usually talking about a very specific machine learning model. And the model is the thing that's kind of like I would say like is making the decisions. It's kind of like when this comes in, it outputs this. You can have kind of like a more of an abstract idea of what a model is. So kind of like if I were to kind of draw a little, hopefully it's fine if I draw a little thing on there.
You can do a whole other thing. So you can go up the top and you can make whatever shape you want.
Okay. So like I would probably like, I'm trying to make this so I can use your like data in stuff. How do I make this?
Oh yeah, you can also copy them.
Okay, cool. I'm learning as I'm talking. So I'm like, looking at these buttons. Like,
I love how I'm like, jump in a live collaborative software that you've never used immediately and talk and draw at the same time.
It's got some clicky things. I've seen this. I've seen something like this before. I can click stuff. So what I'd have this little blue square here, that's the model. And the model takes in data. And so that's where kind of like that data in, that you can kind of think of like that square that you have is that data coming in, and then it's going into this blue box, which is the model. And then what comes out of there is going to be essentially like some description. Like you can, this is where people talk about like the black box. It's kind of like, and sometimes we don't really care about what it is. Like black box model, for the record, is much more about saying we don't know how it works internally, or it's not easy to understand what's going on internally. But the point is that you have this box that takes in data and then outputs something. And essentially in that model is like all the little rules. It's like, when this happens, you know, do this kind of thing. And so like, for example, like a simple one with like saying cats versus dogs is that if it has orange fur, it's a cat, you know, like that would be kind of like an example of like a rule. Now the rules for most machine learning models are much more complicated. In fact, maybe in the sense that they don't really have human meaning. Like you can't attribute a human, like what does that actually mean? So there's weird, interesting things that happen there. But the point is that there's this box that is the model. It takes in data and then outputs some kind of output. And now if the output is about saying what group you're in group A, you're in group B, you're group C, we call that a classification model. If the model instead outputs some kind of number, and really just any number or even a set of numbers, we talk about that being a regression model. That's good. Like, feel free to like stop me if I'm like you're having like, oh my gosh, this is making sense. Like, you know, I have follow up. No, this is good. Like, and that's kind of like the base. And we talk about that. That essentially is like, it's not all of machine learning, but that's what we usually think of a lot of like the models that we use. That's kind of like, they're doing one of two things. Now, what's interesting is that you can have it output whatever number you want, like whatever you're talking about. Like, so I talked about saying you have a picture of a dog and it inputs the picture of a dog and then says, how old is that dog? You know, it could be the number of like months. You can also do things like, I'm trying to think of top of my head, like it doesn't have to be a picture. It could be, for example, text. So like, let's say, for example, you have a paragraph, you know, or say, let's say a review, like you have a review on Amazon or some other website, and you basically feed in the text into this model, and outputs could be like, oh, is this a positive review? Is this a negative review? Is this a neutral review? That would be classification. But you also could have framed it in the sense of saying, how many stars should this review be represented by? Is this a 1-star review? Is this a 5-star review? And that's kind of like the ideas you can take in text and output something. And that output could either be classification or regression. And sometimes you can imagine now, you could take a regression model that outputs like a 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 4-star, 5-star review, and actually have it say, oh, if it's below 2 stars, that's a bad review. And then if it's above 4 stars, that's a good review. And then you just turned your regression model now into a classification model. So there's a lot of relationship between the two.
Is that something to do with weighting?
Ooh, yeah. So this is where weights are kind of like, now we're going deep into this model. We're like, how does this model like work? And so there's a bunch of different techniques you can do for how you make the rules in this model. The very, very basic idea is kind of what you've written here, rule-based, if orange for a cat, right? If meow equals cat, right? Like, perfect, right? And like, this is something like my 3-year-olds can like do. Like, it's like, oh yes, like if it's meows, it's a cat. And like, very good, right? Like, you know, the classic of this though, is like if you trained your model to do, I'm tripping a little bit, but like if you trained your model just to identify cats and dogs, all it knows is cats and dogs, and you feed it a picture of a goat, it's not going to magically say it's a goat. It's going to say it's a cat or dog, right? And this is the example I have, like when like kids are learning, like my little ones, right, who are growing up, they're, when they first learn stuff, they're like pointing at different animals. They're like, oh yeah, like that's a dog, that's a cat. And then they see something like a cow and they're like, dog. And you're like, nah, that's a cow. And they're like, cats. Like, oh, okay, like cow. And they have to learn what makes a cow, you know? And that's kind of like this idea of like the model, like learning or training. It's kind of like, it's figuring out a little bit of what's going on inside. So backing up a little bit of like what's going on in this model, the really simplest one is something called a rule base, which is what you have there. I don't actually know if you know the term rule based like model, but yeah, see, it's very intuitive, right? And the idea there is that model, this box that inputs data and outputs something, it can be just a bunch of rules like if statements. And this is where people talk about like traditional AI from like the 80s and stuff, like a bunch of if statements and stuff like this. And that's like, ooh, like really, like you can imagine it gets really complicated, especially for something like, you know, what makes a cat a cat. If you see a chihuahua, it might have a lot of overlap rules that you might say is a cat or whatnot. So that's like one type of model. And generally, like, it's not a bad way to do things. In fact, sometimes it makes more sense because you can more easily debug it. But what people are most interested in nowadays, and we've been using these for a while, and now they've gotten to a point where we can do it for a lot of different things like language, is something called like supervised learning, which I see you writing that too. And so the supervised learning is really interesting because I'm not going to attempt to draw it because I think I'll do a bad job. Like, just, I'll try. So
go for
the
it.
Classic, I'll try drawing this. I'm learning the tool that Renee made me start using it on fly. No. But if you again have this blue rectangle, hopefully you can see that, right? And you have this stuff coming in, and then you have a thing coming out.
Very descriptive, right, Victor.
Yes, thing coming out. A number, if I want to be really descriptive, it's a number or a vector tensor or something like that. Like, but doesn't really matter. It's just, it's a thing. That's, it's easier to say that, but a thing comes out, right? And what happens, what in traditional like programming we would do, this model would just be rules. It'd be like, okay, you write, what you would write is the model rules inside. And then you would make sure you have good rules by putting data in and then having something come out, and that makes it, like, that is correct. Like the thing coming out matches with what you'd expect. So for example, if you have a picture of a cat, you expect that based on your rules in here, that outward would come a cat. And if it's wrong, you would modify the rules, right? And you would do this, add a new if statement, or say, oh, well, if it's black in white, but has whiskers and a pink nose, it's probably a cat. So you say, like, if that happens, then it's a cat. But then you might add a new rule and so on. I'm trying to picture different cats and dogs in my head. And I'm like, oh, whatever makes them different. Yeah. It's like, how do you describe all the possible rules defining all the cats and all the dogs from each other? Like,
that was my next question. So where do the rules come from? Or is that a data set? What is that?
Yeah, so this is kind of what we're moving towards, is like more modern machine, like what we say is machine learning. And so that's more like rule-based, rule-based AI, but basically just, it's just programming. It's like, oh, here's a set of rules. And like, we create the rules, we wrote those rules. The other paradigm, which is machine learning, is now instead we have this model and we actually feed in, and I probably should use a different color for this out, but you can imagine that instead of having just the data coming in, we also have the answers coming in. So you feed now the model saying, hey, here is the picture of a dog or a cat, and here is what it should be. So you feed it basically, here's a picture, and here's the correct answer. And the machine learning model learns the rules, or we call it training. So basically, it's kind of like, this is like when you talk, like I think about like my kids, like my, I compare my kids to machine learning models all the time, you know, because like they're like young and learning a bunch of stuff, which is great, because they're great analogies and examples. But when I talk to my kids like, about learning what animals are, I might give them some examples. Oh, a dog, you know, it has whiskers, it barks and stuff like this. But generally, that's really tiresome. Like, imagine trying to say all the different rules about every single animal and exactly how to like define it, right? It's easier to say, hey, here's a picture of a camel. That's a camel. And they're like, oh, okay. Here's a picture of a dog. That's a dog. And then you show them a different picture of a dog. Maybe that dog was like black and this dog now is like gray or something like that. And like the kid starts forming a picture in their mind of like, oh, all of these things are dogs. This is a camel. This is a goat. This is a cat, you know? And like they start forming this idea in their head of like what that means. And at a certain point, we've all done this, you know, as humans, essentially, as we grow up, is that now I can show you a picture of a dog and cat, and you can pretty much figure out almost immediately without even thinking about like, how do you know it's a dog? How do you know it's a cat? You're just like, I just know, like I can look at it and it's like, that's a dog, that's a cat. And that's kind of the analogy of what we're doing with machine learning is essentially we're having a thing, we're showing them, here is the input and here is the output, the answer, and taking those two things, you figure out the rules.
I want to go to do you remember the Chihuahua muffin?
Yes.
Like, yeah. Is that, and also, because something my dad mentions all the time is he's like, I'm a machine learning engineer. I'm like, are you? He's like, do you remember the classification that when capture changed to it would get you to classify images, essentially? That's what it was doing, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So just to kind of go back a little bit.
We're talking about like it's a grid of like oh, yeah. Which is a bike or something like that, or like which buses?
Which of these pictures is a stop sign? And you'd be like, wait, was that a Google thing that was like Google used that as a training?
Yeah, so Google still uses that too. They actually, I think they purchased CAPTCHA, if I remember this right, like the company CAPTCHA, and they basically redid this. And they used, like, for example, the Google Maps car would go by, right? Take pictures of everything, right? Street view car, right? Oh, like, you know, what is this house? What's the address of this house? So it could basically make sure like kept that in this database, but it couldn't always read numbers. Like sometimes the numbers are kind of hard, but we people are pretty good at like seeing, you know, addresses that are kind of half obscure. You know, we can kind of see that. And so they would actually take like literally from Google Maps and say, oh, here is a number. Person, tell me, what is this number? And basically that was kind of part of the training. And they also did this with Google Books, where they literally scanned literally like every book, like where they basically scanned all the books in existence. And sometimes, you know, you would have like what they call OCR, but with OCR, basically, it's like sometimes OCR would get it wrong. And so sometimes there are words and they basically would say, hey, here's a word, human, tell me what the word is. And basically, if you get enough people to say the same word, you're like, oh, that's probably it. And so that was kind of the beginning of things. And now it's obviously moved over to like you're talking about, I think you're saying with your dad, like the pictures with the different, like, you know, a bike or a bus or stoplight or whatever it is. It's kind of that same kind of process. And you can use that information now and saying, hey, like, here is an answer. Here's like, you know, here's a picture. Here's an answer. Feed it to a machine learning model for it to learn what we call training. It learns basically saying, like, I'm seeing a bunch of pictures and a bunch of examples of traffic lights. I'm starting to understand what a traffic light is now.
That was my next question. I don't know the word, but with the Chihuahua muffin, for anyone who doesn't know, I don't know. Is it a meme? It was like, here's a bunch of...
I honestly don't know where it started. Like, I know I've seen it as a meme, but I've also seen it, like, I think I've literally seen it in, like, a research paper, like, if like, Chihuahua, and, like, I don't even know, like, where it comes from, but...
But the Chihuahuas, their faces look like muffins, and you have to...
It's like a blueberry muffins, right? Like, right? Yeah, yeah.
So, is that an example of, is it, what's the word? Not defensive programming, but it's like...
Oh, geez. When you said defensive, it like broke my brain because I know what you're trying to say. Yeah. Adversarial.
Yes, adversarial. Yeah. So what is that?
So
does that fit on our little Excalibur?
Ooh, yeah. So this is interesting. So you hit a few things, right? So like the first issue is like when you're feeding this thing, it's kind of like I said a couple times now, where if you give like my kid a picture of, let's say, an emu, right? They never seen an emu before. A giraffe or an ostrich? Ostrich would be good, right? But like, even that seems more correct, right? But if they said giraffe, you'd be like, no, that's not a giraffe. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really wrong. Like they have to learn now this new thing. And so the thing is, if they've only seen one picture, let's say of an emu, they've only seen an emu before, they've never seen an ostrich, and they just learned a bunch of other stuff, and they've only seen one picture of an emu. When they're like 10 years old and they see an ostrich, they're like, oh yeah, an emu. And they're like, no, that's an ostrich. And you're like, what's an ostrich, you know? And so you want to find those edge cases. And so there's a couple things for adversarial examples, is that you can do this to make your model what we call more robust, meaning that it's less likely to mess up. So you give it a lot of examples. That's basically, you give it not just a lot of examples that it hasn't seen before, but also making sure that the really rare cases also are like over-exemplified. Like we talk about like oversampling is a strategy where you basically say like, maybe there's like most pictures of animals are of like a lion, you know, a bear and all these different things. And there's like, out of all of the thousands or millions of pictures of animals, there's like only one picture of an emu in like your we'll call our training set, our data set. We want more examples of emu so that basically it can learn. Because otherwise it's like, hey, I can basically not learn what an emu is and still do really well on everything else. And the model's like, that's good enough for me. Like, I'm going to be an A-minus student and I'm okay with that. That's kind of like what this attitude is. So an adversarial strategy can be trying to find those edge cases and trying to basically, there's a couple ways. One is like actually trying to make it so it's better. But you can also do this in the sense that trying to trick the model in the sense of purposely giving it something that will make it the wrong output. So there is, this paper is older now, like it's got to be almost a decade old, if not older, where they gave an example from the paper. It was like a picture of, I can't even remember what it was now. It was either a panda or a gibbon, if I remember from the paper right. They fed a picture of a panda. And the way a lot of classification models work, they don't just say, oh, that's a panda. They say, oh, there's a 70% chance this is a panda, but there's like a 10% chance it's a cat, you know, and it's like basically fixed like the most likely one. And if you know how the model works or you get enough examples, there's a bunch of, actually one of the books is actually literally adversarial attacks on like neural networks. But if you know how the model works or you have enough examples where you can test this out, you can figure out how to modify the picture to make it guess something different from the actual answer. So this paper had, for example, this example showed a panda and it said, oh, the model, just a regular picture of a panda. The model said, oh, like something like 70% panda, 10% cat, and like had a bunch of other percents of different animals. But then they modified it, and I believe they modified multiple pixels, and then later on a research paper showed they could do it with one pixel. But basically they changed a bunch of pixels slightly where the picture looks exactly the same. It does, like you look at it, you're like, that's clearly a panda, nothing has changed. And what's interesting is they modified it in such a way that the model will say, oh, that is 99.999% a gibbon, 1000%, like, you know, basically saying that is definitely a gibbon. And like the joke was, well, not the joke, but like the concern is that that picture of a panda with slightly modified pixels looked more like a gibbon than an actual gibbon did. Like, and that's kind of the interesting part of it, where you can do adversarial attacks like this. And you can do this to find issues with your model, but also find issues where if you're essentially a bad guy, you know, you're like, hey, I want to mess with this model, either from like trying to trick it. Like, let's say, for example, you're trying to get around filters that are automated, you know, from image classification. You can, if you know how to make it work, you could maybe modify the picture just slightly. So maybe it gets passed through like nudity filters or something like that. That's kind of the idea of like adversarial attacks, essentially, is you can do it on purpose, like trying to make your model more robust to find out what those weaknesses are, or you can do it to basically just mess with the system.
I've got here, this is an emu, adversarial edge cases, three-legged dogs, weird examples, axolotls. So attacks or also training. I feel like we got moved away from, or I moved us away from supervised and unsupervised learning. Because I did hear a definition for unsupervised learning recently that I wanted to kind of go more into, because I that seems like magic, surely.
First, before going to unsupervised, the things that we talked about are supervised learning, right? It's that basically supervises, to make it like clear, is that we have the answers and the inputs. We have the inputs and answers, and we have the model figure things out. Unsupervised learning basically relies on not having the answers. There isn't an answer that, whether the answer exists or like, or sorry, if it's like the answer exists, but we don't feed it to the model, or we don't even know how to say an answer, we don't have an answer to give it. That's kind of what unsupervised learning comes through. And it's a definitely different kind of beast. In general, we can still talk about it as like a model, but in that case, the unsupervised learning is much more taking in data and putting something out without having, like again, said, like I think you've said, like, a little feels like magic, right? It's like what's going on with this kind of thing? And unsupervised learning, for the record, it's really tough. Like it sounds like you're like, oh, I just feed it a bunch of pictures and it's like, ah, cool. Like it figures it out. Turns out that's actually really tough to do. But the main things that unsupervised learning are really good at is something called clustering. And so you might have something, for example, a bunch of different pictures. And you don't give it an answer. You don't say what those pictures are, but the model can take those pictures that are similar to each other and kind of group them. Like, and I'm kind of like using this abstract idea, but like group them into like space, like say, oh, these images are very similar to each other and these images are very similar to each other. And it doesn't actually know what those things are, but it just knows they're very different from each other. And One example of this can be, I've seen with the MNIST data set, which are, I don't know if you've come across that, is basically a data set of hand-drawn numbers. For example, a one and a lot of sevens will probably be closer together because of the way people tend to draw them, is that you kind of have a one that's kind of more of a straight line and a seven that's kind of like mostly a straight line, but maybe a little top. And then for example, like a two looks very different from a one compared to at least to a seven. And so you can kind of end up getting this picture of grouping them together that are more similar to each other. The models can't necessarily tell you like what those things are, but I can say these things are more close to each other than other stuff. And that's kind of like a big part of unsupervised learning.
That's all we have time for today, but tune in next week for part two of this special episode with Victor G, where we talk about adversarial attacks, machine learning, and cosmic rays. Until next week, stay curious.